But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Scott Brennan again, Turbo Shenanigans podcast, kind of a spur of the moment podcast, actually suggested by Taryn, who is joining me once again. It's been a little while, and Chris Wan again. It's kind of like reuniting after a little while. We rattled off like 6-7 of these at the beginning. And a couple of them got corrupted, a couple of them we got corrupted by alcohol, and I didn't use a lot of it, but what's up, guys?
You first.
What's up with me? Well, like I said, these guys, I'd like to start off this conversation with beers of the week, not to be confused with beards of the week, which is what these guys heard when I brought up this whole thing earlier, but like, strangely enough, I do have a beard at this time. Very weird thing for the summer, but not a weird thing for me.
Not a weird thing for an Indian.
I mean, I'm probably the hairiest man I know. Like, Indian or not, like, you see some Indian people, it's just like anything else. Like, I think we have a higher threshold, but man.
I wouldn't
like
call
the
that.
The hairy Indians are like the hairiest people.
What you have is not a beard.
Dan Flansbaum was really close. To one of the hairiest people I've ever seen.
So Flansbaum, that must be German. That's got to be German or Austrian.
Probably, yes.
Which is weird, because I don't see a lot of hairy Germans. Mm-hmm. Indians, it's like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
They're a dime a dozen.
Now, honestly, if you shaved in the morning, like, baby face, like, you know, razor to face, about what time would we start? Like, I know it's like 5 o'clock shadow, blah, blah, blah. But what time would you think, honestly, we'd start to see a little bit of dark arising?
I noticed that when I got to be a grown-ass man, when I shave, like even like full out with a razor, there's still like some gray skin area on my face that just never changes color back to like what it originally was. So there's always some sort of like patch of stuff. But then I like, say I woke up for work 8 o'clock or something, I'm out the door with a clean face.
Right.
By the time 5 o'clock rolls around, for sure,
really,
I have a good patch. Yeah. By the time the day is done, I have what most people would call, like, you know, probably 3 days worth of stubble. But after the first 3 days, it kind of settles down for a second, and then by like the weekend, I like basically have the whole Teen Wolf thing going on, you know?
Right. It's. I wonder if there's like any correlation between like, you know, because like hair is skin cells. I wonder if like you grow more skin more rapidly too.
Well, I'm serious. Probably.
Like, because like at all times you're pushing skin cells towards the top layer of your skin, but you happen to be pushing tons of beard hair and ass hair, you know, and stuff like, you know, that.
I would say, let me interject here.
It would explain why my how my youth was spent.
if I can just
making extra skin here. Everybody thinks I'm fat, but I'm just making extra skin because I'm so damn hairy.
Listen, what, it's a genetic disease. I make too much skin.
No, I would say your hair is closer to something like your nails. Because your nails,
yeah.
Because the follicles of your hair and your cuticles of your nails are kind of similar. Like, they
can, Juan almost said cuticles.
Cuticles.
Did you know that our nails are made of the same thing that a reptile's scales are made out of? Something called chitin.
As well as beetles and insects. Yep.
Yeah, pretty cool. So
this is
Karen,
this
you're like half.
This is what Scott sounds like when he's teaching people.
Did you know?
Did you know?
The more you know.
That reptile scales. And...
All right. So to start us off, Tanwan,
so beers of the week.
Beers of the week.
Right now, like today, it's a Saturday. Scott Juan and myself wanted to hang out in person today. Things didn't work out. Whatever. So yeah. I had bought a bunch of beer. I'm having one of them right now. It's Firestone Walker. It's a Opal. It's a dry hop saison. Proprietor's Reserve, 7.5% IPA, smooth as hell. I love Firestone Walker.
Me too.
Other than that, this week I got Neshaminy Creek Churchville Lager. Not usually something I'd get. I'm not a big lager fan, but it's just so fucking hot and humid. So I'm drinking that today. What are you guys drinking?
I'm currently drinking, I don't know, they always suck me in and I'm never really too satisfied, but the store up the street has them. I'm drinking Dewclaw Funk Blueberry Citrus Wheat. It's not bad. It kind of just tastes like every other blueberry beer you've had. But what I noticed with Dewclaw is like, it seems like everything's just kind of in the middle. Like it, nothing really wows me. Nothing really is disgusting. And it just kind of, I think somehow they got some kind of crazy financial backing in the last couple, maybe even just the last year, because now they're in like every store. Started with the Sweet Baby Jesus, and now you see like fucking 600 of them.
Yeah.
Baby and I'm not Jesus big on either of them, but I just picked up a six pack because it was a nice little summery beer. Blueberry citrus sounded good. But as far as this week, I actually haven't drank a lot this week. I was on vacation.
I think that was
last week. And, you know, when you're on vacation, you're not. You know, because you're drinking by like 12 o'clock. It was just a lot of Yingling. But I did have one interesting beer. It was called like Tropic Ale. And it was made by like one of the resorts down there. And it was like honey and like elderflower, I think it was.
Nice.
And that was pretty good. But I will also say, I know it's not technically in the week. I went to a great brewery down there. It was a little microbrewery. It was RAR. It was like Real Ale something something. Really awesome brewery. Just a small place with like a shuffleboard table, but all the you could see all the equipment and all the beers are freaking fantastic. They had a saison that was like out of this world. That was probably their best one. And then I tried their IPA and their Nut Brown, which were very good. And I really dug the brewery's vibe. So I guess that would be my beers of the week and a half. But, yeah. Ron?
Beer. So what did I drink this week? I think the first beer I had was basically an hour ago, the whole week. Not to brag, but, you know, I'm drinking... I find Pilsner beer goes by Miller Lite. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am serious. I bought a. Nice. I bought like a 24 case for like a family barbecue, and so I'm like,
Nasty one, you nasty.
Hey, sometimes you gotta do it. Sometimes that's sometimes that's what's in the fridge.
Yes, I say that in jest as well.
I'm drinking
a. Everybody, like, everybody's got to drink a Bud Light, a Miller Lite, or a PBR, or.
Yep.
You know, I don't think Yingling is in the same category as those beers, but a Yingling, just that crisp American beer. You got to do that every now and again.
I agree. What's your cheap beer of choice? Mine is actually Yingling in a can. I think it's actually good, and it's nice seeing like 24-pack sleeves of it, which is, like I said, on vacation, what I did was like, and actually I'm starting to do that at home, buy like or a six-pack of a good beer, maybe like a big beer, and then just keeping like Yingling cans in the fridge for like, you know. So it kind of cuts down on cost a little bit.
Yeah, I love Yingling too because you get it from Costco.
Yep.
You just keep it cold in your fridge, and like when you don't want something like sludgy and crazy and dark and it's going to fuck you up so bad that you can't leave the house,
right.
Like you get a Yingling and it's something you can actually just drink, you know?
Like for a while there, like – I felt like I was drinking only like, craft beer. Like, and it gets very expensive. And especially since it's summer and I'm, you know, kind of out of work, working odd jobs here and there. It's like, sometimes you just have to just put some Yinglings in the fridge, and they're not bad. So that would be my favorite, like, cheap beer. I know there's, like, a whole other plateau of really cheap beers, but I could afford, like, the extra dollar to get a case of Yingling.
Yeah. You got
Mom,
a Yingling.
You got a favorite cheapo? Maybe Miller Lite?
Yeah, I'm kind of drinking already. I don't know. I have something against Yingling. Just after I read that they use, you know, like corn flavor or whatever, it's kind of I taste it. Not as much. I mean, Yingling is like really, you can actually like, I can taste like corn syrup or something. I can't.
Well, you realize like Miller Lite and Bud Light and Coors Light are like pretty much like 50% corn. Because it's cheaper than malt. That's kind of why it's cheap and light and things like that. But, you know, sometimes you got to bite the bullet. You can't always be drinking $8 big bottle beers or $10, $12, $13. Otherwise, you'll have two beers and then you're all out of beer.
You know, I remember we talked about Duclos at some point, some other, I think it was a craft brew podcast that we did. That was probably the last one we did together, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
That one, in I think you talked about the internet too. I don't know.
But
you're right. Duclos, it just seems like their flavors are kind of artificial. They don't really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Duclos, it's kind of middle
it's
of the road.
Too over the top. Like,
yeah.
They had that. Which one was that, Scott, that you mentioned earlier? It's that
the
peanut
sweet
butter.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah.
That one,
it's like
I think,
peanut
is,
butter
that
or
one's really good in the winter.
You know what it is, though? You know when they take food and they turn it into something that's more like a smell science?
Right.
Like, you know, like when flavor and smell, like not flavor, but smell has never been something directly related to the food industry until, you know, more recently when they started putting it more chemicals involved with the food processing. So that's what I get from drinking Duclos.
Like,
it just seems like they use a lot of processing.
It's a lot of exactly what you're talking about. It's actually like all extracts. That's what
like banana flavored runts. Like those have that
precisely.
Weird,
artificial flavor.
Maybe I should make a banana flavored runt ale.
Oh man, worst seller of all time.
Yep. But,
also, there's a beer called this Wells Banana Bread Beer. I'm sure you guys have had it.
Oh yeah.
And it, I mean, I don't want to diss anything, but man, I don't know. That beer is not for me. I'll put it that way.
You know what?
Like, you know,
give me like a little like 4 ounce glass of it, and it's not bad. But the whole big one, it's like it's too much.
I mean, even then, like even a little bit of it, I find it's like, well, why would I drink that over, let's say, anything else? Yingling.
I
don't know, something with like less. I mean, I have to give it up to them for trying something like that. There's a brewery called Sam Smith's, to be confused with Sam Adams. This is an English beer company. They've been around forever. They make great stuff. And some of it is a little over the top. They make like a strawberry beer for any fruit beer fans that are listening. And the strawberry beer is actually really good, but it's a lot like what you see nowadays with something like Leinenkugel's. It's these over the top, like candy sweet kind of beers. They're almost in the realm of like a Smirnoff Ice.
Yeah. Leinenkugel, other than like a ice cold summer shandy on a hot day, the other beers are so effing bad. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't even, like, that Sunset Wheat tastes like Fruit Loops to me.
I gotta
it's
disagree,
yo. Disgusting.
Know. They got that, the berry wise of lemon, I think. That one, I like that one. That's like, it tastes like a wine cooler almost, if you like those.
I don't like those.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It doesn't taste like a beer.
What? It's not supposed to, right? It's yeah, fruit beer. It's not like, you know, beer with like a hint of this. It's fruit beer.
I mean, there's fruit beer like you go to like you got your Pyramid Apricot. You got your what's that one that we always get? One that blueberry one that's really good.
Oh, from Muddy Foot or
yeah, Big Muddy. And they make a blueberry beer.
Blueberry Blonde, yeah, that one's
that's
good.
The one.
That one's
that's
I like
great.
The
that'll
blue
be my beer of the
blueberry.
Summer. I'll say.
Yep,
I like the Blue Point blueberry one. That one's pretty good too.
I think if you guys like blueberry beer, like you should try out that Big Muddy. I'll give that a ringing endorsement. And
it's
it gets
funny,
you
like,
fucked up too. Cause
I actually made blueberry beer a couple times, twice I think. And it's interesting because I use like, you know, all real blueberries, and it almost comes out more like a wine. You're getting like that berry flavor. You're not getting that like sugar sweet blueberry. You're getting more of that like. Winey kind of grapey taste. Yeah, tart take. Exactly. So it's interesting. So I've looked online, like what people say, and like a lot of them will use blueberry extract instead of
the skins. Right? The skins will start to get bitter, I'm guessing.
And it's funny. You think about it, because the perfect combination is to make it a wheat beer, because it's like fruit and like sort of that wheat or dough kind of like bread flavor. And I myself don't love wheat beers, but it's the perfect idea. Like, you know, it's genius to make it sort of like a bread taste.
Right. So, I mean, I guess that was a good little segment. I like that. A little beers of the week started off, you know, and talking a little bit. But so basically today was a pretty awful day. I've been working shitty jobs. I worked security today from fucking 12 to 7:30. And basically what that means is I ride around in a fucking beat up ass truck around the lake over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's really not fun, but it's just to pay the phone bill during the summer, pay, you know, have a little pocket cash and, doing all sorts of things. But, and then like the day comes, me and Taryn were supposed to hang out. His car was fucked up, so he couldn't come to me. Then I was planning to go down to him. I got out of work even later than expected. I got out around closer to 8. I get home, have a big ass fight with my wife. I guess that's what married couples do. But, you know, big blowout, super depressing. Went on for like an hour and a half. Then I was going to go to Jersey City. But at that point, I probably had 3 beers already or something like that. And then it gets a little questionable. And then, you know, by that time, it was almost 9:30. And I felt bad. You know, I felt bad. But I was glad that, Taryn, you suggested doing a podcast, because, you know, like, it's almost like a little bit of therapy, a little bit of kind of like a cheer up, a release.
It's a little cathartic, yeah.
Yeah. But it just been one of those days where it's just like kind of nothing goes right. Things didn't go right this morning. It was like I wanted to get things done. It didn't happen. But just one of those days. But I wanted to start last night. I actually did a comedy show in Montclair. At a Caribbean Grill. Now, I was invited by this guy named Dennis. I met at a show, black Pardon guy. It. Yes. Hello.
Dennis Brennan.
Darren?
Yeah, you were invited by Dennis Brennan.
Oh. I thought you were losing me. You were just like
Brennan.
But I was invited by him. You know, a black guy. He was pretty funny. He liked me on the other show, and I knew I was going into it. I knew it was going to be a predominantly black crowd, which I have no problem with. And actually, I was kind of intrigued because it was a Friday night out.
Nobody said you had a problem, bro.
Yeah. But it was a night out. I figured to go get some awesome food. So I get there. I took my wife and her friend. We got all awesome food. We got like 3 beef patties, like those, I don't know, they're almost like samosas in a way.
Those things fucking rule, man.
Yeah, they really rule.
Jamaican beef
and then
patty.
We got of course jerk chicken, because if you're going to a Jamaican place, you should probably get jerk chicken.
The General Tso's of Jamaica.
Exactly. And then we got curried goat, which was so fucking good. So the food was amazing. But of course I get to the place, and it's the whole crowd is black or African American, whatever you want to say. And actually, I was kind of excited about it, because it's just a learning experience, you know, getting up and just doing it regardless. I was the only white comedian. But overall, it was good. I actually got up and they just let me go. So I did almost close to 20 minutes, which is very long considering I'm doing like open mics. Usually they give you 8 minutes at the most. In New York City, they give you freaking 4 to 5 minutes. It's like not even worth going. But it's very interesting.
You're cutting out a lot.
As soon as a lot of comedians went on, it kind of turned into that, like, where a lot of them, I'm cutting out.
You're cutting out.
I'm cutting.
Like 5 seconds at a time, like 3 seconds at a time, you're cutting out.
It's coming through all right for me.
No, maybe it'll clear up.
I don't know. I'm recording it, though. So.
I'm recording it, too. So. But anyway, as the night went on, it almost turned into, like, almost like like old Def Jam comedies where there's not really material and they're just kind of making fun of each other, like the crowd. And then like a crackhead came into the thing and they're just yelling at the crackhead, and it almost became uncomfortable. And the guy Dennis who ran the show, he was actually really disappointed because I guess he had another promoter on it and he didn't do anything, and he forgot the sound system. So I was going through two Radio Shack speakers that were like, I don't know, they might have been like 3 to 4 inches wide. So it was just really like
sweet,
kind of poorly run. But overall, I would say at my set, like I said, it did a long time. For about 10 minutes, I held their attention, and then they kind of started fading off. But it interesting learning experience. And I actually met like a couple people. They invited me back. One of the guys wants me to do a hip-hop masquerade in October. I don't know what that means, but I'm definitely going to do it if I'm free.
So it's a masquerade, so you can put a black mask on? So
that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
What if I cover everything? What if I cover everything and they don't know I'm white?
You can paint your face black and almost get killed. You want to try that?
Do blackface?
Like really push boundaries. You know, do the blackface. Yeah. You know.
Again, black ski mask, you're good.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a really interesting experience. And what was cool about it was, like, it's like I guess doing it more and more and more, I'm starting to lose that fear, that like nervousness. Like you have that natural nervousness, like even when you play a show with a band, you have that like pumped up energy, but it's good energy.
Well, have you been booed at yet? Like the Apollo or whatever?
Not booed. I've had a lot of people talk during things, especially yesterday.
Throw tomatoes at you, maybe, like rotten fruit.
But I don't ever plan on being the comedian that just like rips the crowd apart for no reason. It's just kind of like, I don't know. I guess it's like learning on the job. It's interesting.
That's only if you get heckled.
You should, you should do like, the equivalent of a cover. You should cover one of Gallagher's sets.
Oh man. Bring a bunch of fruit
to like one of these clubs and start smashing it and like getting everybody. Then you'll get definitely booed off the stage.
Especially if I smash watermelon.
Oh! Why is this guy smashing hamburgers over here?
Huh?
Oh yeah. That was a pretty good joke. I just got it.
Yeah. And then he went goal for no reason.
What was really cool was when the show was over, like a lot of them came up to me and like, they were saying like, oh, we like really appreciate you coming. Like it was, because the one guy's like making fun of me in the crowd, and he's like, oh, what are you coming up next? And I'm like, yeah, actually I'm on next. And he's like, oh, shit. But I guess I wanted to kind of not only tell that story just because it's a story, but I wanted to one time we had a pretty in-depth conversation about kind of race and the way people see things and some of you guys' experiences, but I think that file that was one of the ones that was kind of got corrupted and it wouldn't open back up or whatever. But like, this is a great conversation because the two of you, Taryn, you're obviously Indian and black, and Juan, you're obviously Asian and black. But I guess I wanted to kind of ask you guys your perspective on race and any experiences you've had with like racial tension or racist things happening to you, because like last night it was almost like I almost felt the opposite, you know, like I felt like almost the oddball, but it turned out to be cool. And I think a lot of that is just doing what you do and not giving a shit, and all of a sudden no one cares anymore. So you guys know what I'm saying? Hello. awesome silence.
Well, I mean, my experience with like racism has been funny because you think that in the East Coast or New York or whatever, like the North, Northeast, whatever, that shit doesn't really it's not as pervasive or whatever. Like a lot of people have this sort of preconception that the South is where like all that stuff happens. It's not really the case.
Right.
You know, you find Asians, Indians, whatever. There's always a ghetto for any ethnicity everywhere. Like, they're just, it's all pockets, you know, whatever. So, like, you go to Houston and there's like a shit ton of Indians, and that's kind of an interesting thing because
Houston, really.
Like certain areas, and these are like southern, like they're typically considered like these really southern like cities or towns or whatever.
Is there a lot of Indians with cowboy hats? Because that would be interesting to me.
That's what happens. Yeah, like people acclimate. I mean, even like, you know, we haven't really fully made it onto like being regulars on TV yet without it being like, oh shit, there's an Indian and he's on TV. It's like, but in the South, like, you know, I had cousins that grew up in Tennessee, and they have like the sort of southern drawl, and their their mannerisms like are kind of similar, like they're a little
really polite, yeah, well, of course, yeah,
you know, so they're picking up what not only what their parents are doing like from that culture standpoint, they're picking up also what their peers are doing, you know. And I feel like the same way for me growing up in Jersey, like I picked up a lot of the same sort of humor, or like the same sort of I guess, like, I don't even know what else.
Pace.
Jersey. Pace is like, a good one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always this energetic pace, or, like, it seems a little bit more, it's not upbeat, it's more energetic. Like, there's a lot of...
Fast. Kind of, like, constantly moving, I would say.
Crowded, busy, you know, like, dirty. So, you know, I think, you know, the race thing becomes a questionable thing, because for me... Personality-wise, I feel very American, but I do have,
as you should.
I have a strong basis in my family's, like, you know, bringing me up as an Indian dude. So, you know, I'm proud of both sides. Like, I like both sides. I'm very proud of, you know, I love being in America. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't think everybody thinks that way when they see me. They don't necessarily think that I feel that way or whatever, so.
So can you name like a, like maybe like, I guess a time or like a really bad, like an example of something you've experienced? Cause I remember like when we talked about this once, you said, I guess, I don't know, some guys came up, I think it was in the middle of the street or something like that. I kind of forget the story, but, I don't know. Maybe you could recall.
There's been a lot of times. That's the thing. It's like, so right now Scott's dog is barking on Skype, and my speakers are blaring that bark out, and my dog is barking now back at Scott's dog through Skype.
Right.
Which is not the first time this has happened, but it's the first time it's happened to me, which is pretty funny. That said, like, I mean, I've had a lot of encounters with these kind of things. I mean. None at this time that I'm like particularly attached to, but the thing is that generally they make you feel more aware of people feeling that way. Like when you think about people thinking that, or like, you know, pigeonholing you like that, it's just like it's a little off-putting. It makes you feel less warm and less whatever. So I think that also comes through up here in New York and the Northeast and stuff, especially given the pace, especially given the amount of different cultures there are just crammed into one space.
Right.
You know, you don't have breathing room. So it's like on top of that, when race becomes an issue, it becomes like more brought to the surface. So my experiences here are no really any different than what people conceive the South to be like. It's probably a little bit less outright there, or a little bit less overt. Who knows?
Right. Have you ever like experienced like flat out like discrimination, anything like work related or anything like that? Or
I mean, people always make jokes about ethnicity and stuff like that or whatever, you know, but like even at my current job, I can think of like, yeah, I'll just go ahead and bring it up, I guess. Like one of my superiors, like when he knows how like I pronounce my name at work or whatever, but he'll still try always to, he does it jokingly, but he'll be like, Darun? But it's funny because he's a Spanish dude or like a Mexican dude, so he's making it like a spin on Mexican, but he's saying it in a way that he thinks is like the like proper Indian pronunciation.
Right.
It still sounds very Spanish. It's like very like Darun.
But I'm guessing he's doing it like lightheartedly and jokingly.
Of course. Like,
right, so that's
those things are like, that's like the proper way to have that. Like, believe me, I don't believe in keeping it neutral and NPC and stuff like that. Like, it's way funny. And in fact, that's the basis of Scott and me and Juan's friendship, is that we were at a Sweet 16 once, and Scott was being racist, and that broke the ice quickly. So that was the best way for us to become. And then we formed a band together, and now we're, like, you know, still doing this shit 20 years later or whatever. So it's good. It's good.
I think we live in a society now where, and every week, someone's got to apologize for something in the media. Someone, God forbid, you discuss, you make a joke about any kind of group, and that group's got to be up in arms. We're in a zone where everyone is so fucking sensitive, and a lot of times they're punishing, whether it's a comedian or a comedic radio show, where things are done in comedy for laughter, which means, in general, I mean, it is exaggerating the truth, is laughing at stereotypes. You go to a comedy show or you go see something funny, obviously it's meant in to get a laugh. And
but you know what the problem is, though? If you're going to use comedy as a platform for free speech, then you have to realize that there's consequences to having free speech. It's like free speech, it happens all the time in politics, where it turns into slander, and then the slander becomes truth to some people because it's been, you know, it gets repeated and repeated. So anything like that, you have to take into account. People are sensitive to those things. They know that slander can change, you know, just by reputation. It can really damage the reputation of an entire race just because one person says something stupid and trying to be funny. You know, it doesn't make it right for them to say it, though.
I disagree. When you're going to see – okay. When you're going to see an art exhibit, okay, like, remember a couple years ago, I guess someone made, like, Mary out of, like, shit or something like that. You remember that, Taryn? In one of the museums, like, someone made, like, a sculpture of, like, Mary or Jesus or something like that out of, like, shit or something.
Definitely.
Right. People can take that as offensive, but in, like, the art world, it's considered art, okay? A musician can sing about things, and they seem to get a lot less, you know, oh, it's art. It's their right. It's the same thing. Your comedy is not meant to it's not meant to please everyone. You're allowed to be offended. If you take that out and you say, oh, you can't say this because someone might be offended, you're walking a really fine line there, because you're basically taking out any kind of any joke. OK, any joke someone can be offended by. If it's a gay joke, the gay people. If it's a joke about your relationship with your wife, all of a sudden you might be, women might be offended. Women comedians might make fun of their husband. Men could be offended. Black comedians all the time make fun of white people. But it's comedy. You have the right to laugh. You have the right to also leave the show if you want. It's the same thing with radio. You can change the station. It's the same thing with a CD. You don't have to buy it a download. You don't have to download it. Once you start taking away the right to things for people to say, you're walking a really, really fine line, and you're talking more control, and you're basically setting the precedent, like, no one's allowed to be offended, and that's just not right.
Well, I think there's a difference between being able to say whatever you want and being able to say whatever you want and having no consequences. And that's the main thing. I mean, you have to expect a backlash somehow if you're going to say something that you know is controversial. It's shock value. If you're talking about comedy like that, you know it's coming. So if you're going to be – if someone's going to get you on camera and put you on YouTube, then you're screwed, because that's how the world is right now. It's so connected,
but that's the thing,
that you're going to offend somebody no matter what. It wasn't always like that. So now people have to be more concerned with how they approach their speech.
But that's the thing. Like, we shouldn't be going in that direction. Like, everyone wants their 10 minutes of fame. I'm offended. Let me make a big stink out of it. Freaking look at some of the greatest comedians ever. Eddie Murphy, okay? How many things did he do about white people and Middle Eastern people? George Carlin made fun of Jews and Catholics and Chinese, everything. Richard Pryor, half his stick was about black people and white people. And they're considered geniuses. It's like now everyone wants to just be offended. It offends me.
But you can't assume everyone's tolerant. That's you're making an assumption about that.
What's wrong with being offended?
What's wrong with being offended?
Uh-huh.
It's like saying everyone has a right to religion, yet you're saying, well, your religions also don't make, any sense. So you can't have both ways. You have to let them do whatever the hell they want, right? That's what you're trying to say.
Absolutely.
But you can't take away, their right to protest either. There's nothing wrong with that.
Then they can, but it's the everyone looking for I'm offended. Let's go after that person and let's try to make them lose their job or let's try to.
There you go. That's part of being a celebrity. You have to keep an image. If you can't back your own actions up, then you won't.
And
you
now
belong,
we're in this
you
world
belong.
Where everyone's got to apologize.
It's a profession.
And they don't
right?
mean it.
But it's a profession.
Yeah, but they
don't
mean it.
But yeah, but they know their limits, right? They know they can't put. There's always a subject that is too sensitive. That's why you say too soon. Because, yeah, sometimes it is too soon.
What started like that when you started controlling entertainment and controlling people's speech and controlling what's allowed to be said? That's how these Holocausts happen. That's how control happens. That's how the Big Brother shit starts to happen.
You don't think that some people have
little
feelings though? Like if you ever watch these Comedy Central roasts, right? Like the last one I just saw, one of the jokes I think was pushing it. It was talking
okay.
about like the I think it was Franco, James Franco, yeah, right, Franco,
yeah.
James Franco, whatever. His grandma was in the audience, and there was a joke about her dying like the next like dying immediately or something like that. It's like really, come on, like we know she's old, but do you have to joke about her dying in front of her, and in front of this grandson?
But
don't you think that's
you
a little too far?
Yeah, but you have the right to say that. As soon as you take the right to say something, you're taking away the right to voice the opinion of being offended. All of a sudden, they're going to be telling you what you have to believe, what is right and what is wrong.
But you realize that.
You know the phrase cheap laughs, like that's what that is. You know,
right.
It's cheap.
Right.
It's just like especially out of roast.
You have to remember that this does not work in the real world. You can't go around doing this in the real world. That's why comedy is a whole different world. It's totally different. You can't compare comedy with free speech in the rest of media, but just in general, like whenever somebody says something offensive, it can't be treated the same way as comedy, because comedy, they basically have no rules, because they all understand the rules are – there are no rules.
Right, but you kind of – that's exactly what it is. You're going for entertainment and art. You want to go to a Marilyn Manson concert back in the day where guys are, who knows, like having sex with each other on stage. You have the right to leave and be offended. You go to – remember like Rammstein? Rammstein would bring out objects and like do each other with them. You have the right to say that's disgusting. I don't want to watch that.
Yeah,
you have the right to enjoy it.
You kind of paid to go see that, though.
Yeah, but you might have paid to go to comedy. You might pay for a subscription to satellite radio.
Somebody doing the same bit in the middle of the street in a crowded area, that's considered public nuisance. They'll probably get arrested for talking like that in public, right? They can't get away.
Well, arrested for speaking. I don't think you can. Why should you be arrested? Arrested for saying something? I didn't beat someone. I didn't do any bodily harm or do anything that's going
I'm talking about the Rammstein thing. Anything like that. Anything that you know is morally not acceptable. It's we live by rules. They're like guidelines, right? They're not like real rules. They're guidelines that we all kind of push slowly, you know, over time. I know that we become more and more liberal over time as a society, but we still have some sort of boundary. And if you pass that boundary, you either want to do it to, I don't know, really push the limits, because I don't know. I guess that's how we get through. That's how we actually evolve. But people are, people are considered crazy at some point. But then I guess 10 years from now they'll be thought of geniuses. That kind of deal. But
what you're almost saying is you're saying, oh, morally we push morals. Well, your morals might be different than the guy's morals down the street. That doesn't make either of you wrong.
Yeah, but we have to live as, you know, a society that we have to understand. That's why we have to respect
each other.
That's
why it's called tolerance. You have the right to be offended. You have the right to voice your opinion. You have both sides of the argument. You take away one of those, all of a sudden you're giving control to something that you, me, Taryn, some guy in the street will not have control of. And all of a sudden you're told what to say, what to do, what to wear, what you're allowed to go to, who's allowed to play somewhere. You know, there's an audience. Like,
but you're kind of playing – it sounds like you're playing like – I'm not going to go into politics, but like the Republican card. Regulations, you know, that's like government shouldn't get involved. You know, regulation is the end of the, you know, freedom. Things like that. It's very extreme. Like it's not that simple. It's not black and white.
First off, when it comes down to it, it's what we're talking about now is words. It's words. You're telling me like, you take the rights away from, black power or white power. Then what do you have? You have an outlet where people can express their opinions, whether they're correct or not. Like, we all know, like, some redneck Ku Klux Klan member is fucking retarded. Like, is saying shit that's stupid. And we have the right to be like, that's – it's nonsense. It's stupid. It's dribble. You give them – all of a sudden you say they're not allowed to do that. It's going to freaking – it's going to come out in other ways, whether it's violence, whether it's mutiny, things like that. So as any kind of artist, you should always have the right to do whatever you want, because everyone has the right to see it, view it, listen to it, look at it.
But you have to be prepared for it. You still got to be prepared for a backlash.
But that's okay.
If you want to push the boundaries. So what's the big deal then? They're still doing whatever they want, but then there's, you know, people making it difficult for them.
We're in a society now where everyone needs to apologize, or, you know, God forbid you say, I stand by my decision. All of a sudden you're.
So you don't lose sponsors most of the time.
Although when you speak of we're in a society now, you know, times got like more quote unquote civilized for sure. But this is really only an American or first world kind of thing.
Right.
It's definitely not something you encounter as much in, like, you know, political correctness doesn't necessarily exist in a lot of the world. So, it's kind of – it's crazy that we accept that, like, even though this is a bigger melting pot and stuff than most places in the world, it's like we're still afraid to step on each other's toes, even though there's so many different types of people here. I guess it's just like the safest way out is to not step on anybody's toes.
Right, to walk the line.
Yeah, like, just make sure you don't, you know –
Well, like, Taryn, like, you know, as an artist in multiple, what am I trying to say? Multiple different ways. Musician, actual, like, drawing, art, painting, animation. You should enjoy the freedom of being able to do whatever the hell you want. And people could say that's the most offensive thing ever and turn you off and... maybe you never have a career again, but that's the risk you take. And if you're expressing yourself, whether it's I agree with you or I hate it, you should still have the right to do it.
Yeah, agree. I mean, that's basic conviction. That's what makes like art in like the times where you could just get hung by the King of England for making a certain piece of art, to mm-hmm. now where you're not even getting hung, but it's like, you know, from a career standpoint or from a social standpoint, like, you know, you are efficiently, you know, essentially being hung in terms of like people are not going to see you the same way, or your career is ruined or whatever. It's like, you know, being ostracized, being outcast uh-huh. because your views are being put out there. That's what right. like the whole system of that is. But I also think that you can do that, like, you know, you can make that happen in a subtle way. You can convey your point in a very tactful or subtle way. I think that's another duty of an artist, is like, you have to make it look good. You got to package it well. Right. You got to make it sound good. That's... And I think if you purvey your views, or it sounds too forceful, or it's not smooth, it doesn't have finesse, then you're not doing your job either. So if you're going to conversation like race, you have to do it in a way that people don't feel like you're alienating them because mm-hmm. of your view being such a stubborn point of view. You know, people don't.
Well, I agree almost 100%, but you don't have to do that. You can do that.
That's
smart decision to do that.
That's an approach. Yeah,
exactly.
You can do it whatever way you want. Like,
that's exactly what I mean.
But at some point you're putting something on the line. Like, be it back in the day when you're making like Christian art, if you're a Christian artist and you're found by like, you know, some other army or whatever, I don't know. Like, say you're being persecuted because of your beliefs, and back in the day it was mainly religious art. So, you know, if you're putting those faiths out there, or whatever it is that you're putting out there, then like uh-huh. you made your statement. So if people judge you on that, and they judge you by killing you or judge you by outcasting you or whatever, you got to be ready to face that when it comes to your point of view.
Let me get this straight here. Taryn agrees with me, basically. That's kind of what's going on. It's 2-1 right now.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, because I'm Taryn. Because you're saying
kind
that
of
nobody should,
that you
be,
should
allowed.
Be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah, but you, yeah, I, but I'm you're saying nobody should be offended, or
no, I never said that.
Well, you said
I
you
never
can,
said that at all.
They can be offended, but they can't complain about it. That's what you said.
No, that's not what I said. I said it's you have the right to be offended, but there's no reason to
complain about it.
Complain all you want, but it's you are able to be offended. It's this begging for apology. It's censoring things, saying you shouldn't do that anymore. It's taking away, it's importing more control on art, or whatever you want to call it, entertainment, or your views. You know, like, that's what you can go on the internet right now and find a Klan website, a black supremacist website, whatever you want.
I'm looking at a Klan website right now.
Yeah. But you know, you have the option to not go there, to look at it and say, oh, whatever. As soon as you, like Taryn said, being persecuted for your beliefs, that's exactly what that turns into.
But to a lot of people, putting your beliefs on the line is what makes art too. So it's like, you can't, they're pretty much mutually exclusive. If you don't want to be persecuted, then you can't really make the art that fills the void of putting your beliefs on the line. I think people really... you know, communicate, they really resonate with right. art that really speaks a strong opinion, because they feel like if they have that same opinion, you're speaking that very strongly for them. That's when that real magic and connection happens. It's like
exactly.
you have to have exactly. that same, you know, resonance with the person that's trying to make the point of view in their own mind or to other people. When they see somebody saying that efficiently, I think that's when people start to appreciate your art.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're putting something on the line, if you're tackling a controversial subject, that's what it is, you know?
Yeah,
you got to be ready to tackle it that way.
I agree.
You could also make art that's like flowers and mountains, and like there's tons of American artists out there from like back in the day that just did really boring but like run-of-the-mill, like this portrays mm-hmm. life every day. So like there's another side of art that's totally safe.
Yeah. Well, that
depends on what you want to do.
That's almost exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, you could go out and if you're a comedian or a musician, and you could do whatever you want to go do racial humor. And if it's not clever or done well, it basically that comes out. People are going to see that. It's not even going to be funny. It's just going to be freaking you're just going for shock value, or you didn't write it. It's the same thing as like dirty comedians, right? But there's dirty comedians who are great, right? Louis C.K. He's a filth bag, but he's he does it cleverly, and he makes it interesting, and he writes it, and you know
he writes his filth. Exactly. He writes his own filth.
So I could go out there on a mic and make like all dick jokes and everything like that, and if it's not well done, people will say that's not. It's the same thing. That's not good art. It's exactly what you're saying. You got art, and if it's well thought out and well presented, exactly like you just said, then it's, you know, people start to appreciate it. If it's just bland and just going for people going, oh my God, and just trying to get attention, people see right through it. It's just like anything. Yeah. Music,
it's,
same
it,
thing.
It's the feeling of like, you know, making it genuine in some way to them. I don't know. Like that part, you got to figure it out. You know, what is genuine to you? Like, so to express those kind of views that are really controversial, you're getting borderline. Like if you're expressing something that's like a racist joke, even when you joke about stuff like that, you're sort of hitting a nerve with other people for sure. But
of course,
you're still bringing up something that you've either noticed or heard, or, you know, like if you're bringing up something that's like sort of a racist point of view, you're saying it even in a way that sounds like a joke. When those things are brought out, no matter what, you're bringing light to something that a lot of people aren't noticing, or a lot of people wish you would notice, right, or whatever. So
or,
it's like,
or people wouldn't laugh at it if they didn't notice it. If they had no clue what you were talking about, they wouldn't laugh at it.
Yeah, or they wouldn't even, like, it wouldn't even be brought up. So
exactly.
To make light of any of that stuff, like, I guess, like, it could be anything. People discriminate against weight. People discriminate against, like, skin color. People discriminate against,
women, men,
whatever. Yeah,
blacks,
gender,
white, whatever.
Like, you know, orientation. Like, it's just, like, people are really...
Sexuality, anything.
It just doesn't even matter. So, I think the takeaway is that if you're confident about what you're going to discuss, or, you know, the issue at hand, then, like, there's nobody to question you, you know? That's your belief no matter what, then.
You have to be confident in your whatever you're doing, whether you're making a song that sounds unique or the lyrical content is a little offensive.
Thanks, Dad.
If you're confident in it and you wrote it and you believe in it, there's no reason you should ever fear doing it.
Man, Scott, you are such a teacher, dude.
Yeah. Maybe I am.
All these moral of the story is be yourself.
Yep. Pretty much.
Get
be yourself.
Persecuted.
be happy that you're allowed. You live in a freaking
isn't that
place that
basic,
you're allowed to have an opinion.
Isn't that the basic story of like? I'll put a controversial statement out. Isn't that sort of like the basic story of like Christianity is like he was conveying his convictions and stuff like that, and he got persecuted for it, and like
you mean Job?
That's what gets recognized.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, it's like we can go into any. Any field of anything, religion, government, art, and it's like it's all, you know, through the eyes that you have, the way you were raised, what you believe in, all that stuff comes into effect. So once you start suppressing any of that, you're going to run into big problems.
Here, let me summarize my point, though.
Okay.
You have the freedom to say and do, design, create whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if anyone's harmed in a process, then you have to be held accountable. And
physically or emotionally?
Both. That's why you can't just assume that you won't, even if you offend somebody, that's, you know, that's part of the process. It's not how it works. Like, you have to realize that you can do whatever you want. You can live your life, seek happiness. But if someone else's happiness is in the way, you're going to have to live up to it somehow.
I agree with you, but I think it also just the whole thing is depends on how invasive that is to the other person. Like if I'm going into them and like, you know, like doing the Clockwork Orange thing where I like pin their eyes open and make them watch sick movies that I made. Yeah, I guess that's kind of fucked up. On the other hand, if I'm making stuff that they can, that's like a passive influence to them, they can't really necessarily have access to it on the daily basis, but it's something like say controversial shit in a museum. Like, why is it controversial? Because you go to the museum, you see it, but you're so like totally passive to it. You're just you're seeing it because somebody else decided that they wanted to put it in their museum. And really, like, you have the choice of then being like, well, fuck this museum because it's showing shit that I think is offensive. So I'm going to leave.
Let's go back to
my point.
It's all invasiveness in that case. Like, you know, how bad is it hurting you?
Let me talk about religion. I know that was brought up for a moment.
Yep.
If you are going to go through the same freedom of speech that you have with media and comedy with religion, then you can't have a double standard there, right? You're saying that it has to apply both ways. But you mentioned something about a sculpture of Jesus Christ, or
I think it was Mary. I can't remember.
Mary made of crap.
Yep.
And you're kind of just shitting on someone's religion. And if there's a freedom of religion, then you're basically saying,
but he might not. He might have been like, an artist doesn't even have to tell what he was thinking. Maybe he was just trying to use a different medium.
I think you're being a little too open-minded with that.
I don't think so. I don't think there's any such thing as too open-minded at all.
I'll agree with Juan on that one. Like, there's a purpose to using a certain type of medium too. Like, if you're going to use like that shit, it's not like,
all right. So
of course the guy knew.
So what?
Whoever did it, of course they knew that he was gonna. He probably did it for attention.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying. You know
what I'm trying to say is that person was. If he was atheist in any or, you know, in any way anti-God, anti-religion, then what he's trying to do is take away someone else's religion just by saying, you know, F you. Yeah, no, that pretty much is what it is, right? It's saying,
go ahead.
Okay, you don't see how that can be offensive to someone who's given his entire life to God. And is happy because he's given his life to God. I'm not religious. I'm just saying this because
this is exactly what I'm saying. This is exactly like,
but you're inferring
like
somebody's
comedy
happiness.
Done poorly. Yeah. Comedy done poorly just for shock value. That's what Jesus made of shit is. It's fucking art done poorly just to offend and make a statement. That guy probably got more backlash, and he fucking probably isn't even relevant. And that's what happened.
Right, and that's what you get. He's an artist.
I think you're almost arguing the same exact point. He's trying to just be offensive, and he got his attention because everyone wants that attention, and then guarantee the guy probably hasn't done anything since.
So, so you're saying that if he did, he has to apologize, right? That was like
he shouldn't have to apologize.
I mean, whoever
at all,
someone in comedy says the wrong word, and then it's taken out of context. And then they have to apologize. That was one of your main arguments. Like, why does he have to apologize?
No one should have to apologize if they don't feel. Listen, an apology made by like people wanting an apology that doesn't mean anything, isn't an apology. It's a goddamn media stunt or a thing to save face. If you don't mean the apology, what is the purpose of apologizing?
How do you know they don't mean it? What do you mean by that?
I'm just saying, if you're forced to apologize. And you know,
it's not really being forced though. I mean, if you can't find any more work, and only way by getting work is by apologizing. Okay, are you selling out? No, you realize that you've made a mistake in your life.
It's if he didn't mean the apology and he wanted to stand by his work, he has the right to do that. And you have the right to never look at another piece of his thing and never give him a dollar and never look at it. That's your right. And if he's that offensive, people are not going to buy into his shit, and that he's already hurt himself. It's the same way if you want to make a song that says the most ridiculous things in it, people aren't going to come back. They're going to get the initial like, oh, my God, that's terrible, and then you're screwed. But if the person has belief behind it, there is no reason they have to apologize. Apologize. If I feel sorry, I should apologize. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's like if you were in a relationship, right, and you're fighting, and you are sincerely sorry, you apologize. If you say, oh, I'm sorry, and you don't mean it, that's going to come out very quickly, like that it wasn't meant to be, because you'll probably start doing the same things again or behave a certain way again. An apology if you take an apology as a definition, it means feeling sorry for something and saying, I am sorry about that. I really, I'm upset by what I did.
The definition of regret.
Exactly. So I think, Juan, I almost think like you're almost saying the same exact thing, just in a different way. A different way. Or I could be wrong. I don't know. But that's the beauty of this. That's the beauty of it. That's what makes debate and conversation and, you know, like you're allowed to disagree. You know, you go to 1939 Germany, you weren't allowed to disagree. You were told what you thought. And
I mean, again, sorry, like, to interrupt, like, this is all, like, America, Canada, England, like, the UK. Like, but then, like, you know, this is the West, and then, like, you have there's a lot of Eastern countries that are slowly making this thing, but there's, like, a whole shit ton of countries that have none of this freedom,
yeah,
you know?
China has very little freedoms, yeah.
Like, exactly. North Korea, like, there's a lot of people out there in the world that just have, like, no ability to speak what they want. So, from our standpoint, like, this is a really bullshit conversation because, you know, for us, it's like, we can debate it all we want, and I'm enjoying the debate, but it's sort of like, you think about all the rest of people out there in the world that have, you know, war to deal with, right, or whatever, but, like, also just the oppression can be...
Oppression, exactly. That's what I'm saying. We have to, especially as... I don't mean to interrupt you either, Tan. But especially as, like, creative people and things like that, you have to value, you have to fight for always being able to be offended. You have to fight for always being able to, the ability to express that opinion. Because once that's taken away, I'm telling you, that is a step of control. That is a tactic done by dictators, like getting people all on one side and then taking away the right of the person who did it. Whether it's religion, like, oh, let's all hate this religion because it's offensive to us, and now we've taken away or made illegal or made hated by the rest of the country or group. Now you've taken that away. Look at, like, these African countries who are like banning homosexuality. Look at that's the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, death. People are being put to death because they're homosexuals, and they throw a campaign out there and groups out there and go to speak to these, you know, undereducated villages and stuff like that. And it becomes a frenzy, and someone who is homosexual is doomed. Doomed. We still have such a great, hopefully it'll always stay. We still live in a place where we are allowed to be offended. We are allowed to voice our opinion. We are allowed to rally people together. But the other person's also allowed to believe what they want without being put to death or physically harmed or put in prison.
So also another basis of America where, you know, like the people who came here were seeking a place not to be persecuted and – you know, like all that stuff. Like, I just feel like that's sort of the basis of the country is, like, you know, being able to separate from that and say, okay, you know, you're gonna be able to do your thing. We're just gonna do this over here, mm-hmm. and like that's the way America is. Like, you can just see little pockets of that going on everywhere. You know, like, it's still to this day is like that.
I agree.
And that is a cool thing. It's just like. Other countries just have a much more focused point of view a lot of the time, and yep. when you start to see that interact with, like, the countries around them, still to this day, you see a lot of other countries sort of, like, arguing over religion still, and there's, like, these religious crusades happening and genocides.
Look what's going on right now. Look what's going on right now with Hamas and fucking Israel.
Yes, exactly. So it's like
Ireland and Northern Ireland, like. We could go through Ukraine and fucking Russia. It's happening right in front of us. North Korea and South Korea. A disagreement over a value, a belief. People feeling so passionately about someone else's belief. Not their own about their personal belief, but God forbid someone not have my belief. Let's attack them or let's entrap them.
You know, it's true. Democracy never existed until, I'm guessing, the United States, though. So there was never a constitution.
You can make an argument that true democracy never really really truly existed, but at least some of the morals or I guess values are there, and we have to at least try to protect those.
But who, you know what's protecting it though? We have that, come on, you know, the system, the judicial and everything is all supposed to be balance and checks, and they don't have that in some of these countries. They just they're it's basically gangs versus gangs. Of course it's not going to work out. We're just lucky enough to you know, have founding fathers who've, you know, settled our freedom of art and speech and everything, and we don't have to worry about any of that stuff. We're like nitpicking now. The other guys, they don't even have a foundation yet. They don't even, there's no way to compare. It's like apples and oranges. You can't even compare us to them.
Well, the same goes for like any other, like you look at like even the big up and coming countries, like the industrial countries that like you're talking about, like China, India.
What was that? The
fuck was that?
Hello?
Yeah, what the fuck was that?
I have no clue.
Did you get attacked by a zombie or something? All I heard was...
You'll have to keep that in the recording.
What the fuck?
I have to hear that back. That was frightening.
What was it? Like a loud sound?
It sounded like you were squeezing a ketchup bottle.
AKA farting.
Yeah, farting into the microphone.
It was either a fart or a dog or a zombie.
So
it was all of the above.
Yikes.
Yeah, you gotta appreciate. You know what I was thinking? I was gonna mention earlier. You should have like a note. You should keep notes of where you should edit it and just like write down the time. That way you can go straight to it and just clear out whatever you need.
Yeah, people have been doing that for at least 50 years. They say like, oh, edit that out.
Sometimes it's necessary. I mean, it's just 10 minutes of, what was that?
I don't even know what you guys heard. That's what's kind of weird.
Whatever it was actually very terrifying, I will say.
Oh, nice.
It was kind of creepy. I hope it comes through in the recording because it sounds like the undead.
Yeah, it was very clear.
But before we went all way off on this tangent, actually going back to the beginning of the conversation, you didn't really get a chance to talk about any real racial things that have happened to you.
Oh yeah.
Which I would love to hear. This has been a fucking awesome conversation.
Juan, tell me about the times that people were racist to you. I would love to hear it.
It's not that simple though. I think I've said it before, it's very subtle and there's no way to pinpoint in exact moments, you know, I was never called a terrorist or anything, you know, there's nothing like that. It's more about living in the white community, and they just look at you a little differently. You don't really, you just know it. They hang out with each other, and then, like, they look at you, like, oh, hey. It's like, maybe part of it's in my head, but it's kind of there. And
hey, that thing thinks it has an opinion.
Yeah. It's like he has emotions. He has emotions
that,
too. That thing over there. It's more about. It's a little different for me because I've never had like a group of Asian friends, so I've never been able to like associate myself with a culture of Asians. Like I don't have a culture like Taryn does. You know, I don't have traditions and ceremonies that I go through on a daily basis set times of the year, you know, we don't really follow anything. So, right. I don't have a connection with being Asian. It's just, basically it's based on appearance. So it's more like, I don't look like you. So maybe you don't think I'm like you. It's always in the back of my head, but you know, I don't really, have any true experiences being racist, except for when they say, oh yeah, you know how to calculate the tip because you're Asian, right? You know, math, things like that.
Juan, you have plenty of experience with me being racist to you.
Oh, okay, but these are all friendly things. You're talking about being offended, right? I don't really...
Friendly things. Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Friendly. You've been trying your best to offend me for the past, like, 15 years.
That's right, John. Yeah. That's right.
Trying your
best. Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I definitely feel that... like, sometimes I want to say that it's, like, one group of people that like you feel a little bit of like, you know, you're uncertain about how they're going to react or whatever, but it's actually not the case. You know, in my experience, it's like I've been a lot of different situations with every different, you know, ethnicity that you encounter, what you think is not tolerable or whatever. It's not really, it doesn't really necessarily come from like one side. So it's just proof that that's not racism. Really, it's just ignorance in any case, you know?
It kind of bringing the conversation to a little bit different. Might as well keep it going. Are you religious or spiritual or none of the above? I'll go first. Like personally, you know, I was raised, I guess we were in the Catholic church. Basically we'd go like on Sundays and I went to like CCD till eighth grade. And I was never really into it as long as I can remember. Always just kind of not bored by it. Always just, doing what I was told basically. And by high school, I was pretty much just like, I'm not doing this shit no more. And it became like a point of contentment with me and my mother, but I could tell that she was almost doing it more like wanted me to go to church or whatever, more of just cause that's how she was raised, you know? She would, you know, go. And, I know that now, I am not, I don't believe in any real organized religion. I think there's a big difference between religion and spirituality. Like I believe there's an inherent reason in all of us that we do that we do things that, are good. I guess you could, like, if you want to put that word, that are, there's a reason we don't, there's a reason you inherently don't steal or don't just, take hatred out, or you don't just, be a sexual deviant. There's an inherent good. And I think there's inherent bad in people. Like,
well, define sexual deviant.
I mean, like a predator, like a, someone who's always out on the prowl, trying to take advantage of people in the name of sex, with the goal of sex and no personal connection. Is that a good definition?
I thought that was a good definition.
I thought that was pretty good. Actually,
it was good.
But like people who are literally just on the prowl to have sex with no personal connection to the person.
Got it.
Almost like treating whether it's a woman or treating a man like a target and just a tool for sex rather than an actual human being. I believe in. I guess it's more of a karma thing. I think doing good things and living like a life that's not filled with what I guess if you were in a religion, it'd be called sin, but doing things that are not, they feel unnatural to me. And I think there's an inherited, there's something within a person that born morals.
The word you're looking for is innate, like, it's innate that you don't do those things.
Innate, exactly.
I would agree with some of that, although I don't think that is necessarily something, like, I'm a very spiritual person myself. I think that, like, you know, like, there's definitely energy to people that's internal and like it just gets recycled through, you know, time, through whatever. And the whole idea of that is that like you have experience with that. Like somehow you're born with some experience of, you know, why you shouldn't do certain things. It's either passed on to you through the cues that you're given when you're really young, maybe something that you pick up when you're really young, just ingrains how people are acting, you know, with each other.
Right.
If you're in a place where that's how people are acting, you know, but at the same time, I don't really, somehow there's an instinct in humans that you know, like to sort of like care for each other for the you know, the aspect good. Of survival.
Yeah, right. So nature versus nurture.
Right.
It's part nature. Of the
exactly what I was going to say. Okay. So, but Taryn, before we get to one, a little bit on how you were raised religiously and kind of where you are now.
My mom is pretty religious, but I only noticed her religion after her dad passed away, really.
Uh-huh.
It must have been there. I was very young, you know, when all this happened anyway. So, but I noticed that either way, it became more apparent to me that she was quite religious once she, you know, had her dad pass. And I think maybe it happened when she had a little bit of experience with that in her family. And I know for me, that's the same way. It's like when my grandparents passed away, I thought, hey, like, those people are just physically, you don't know them anymore. Like, you don't know where they are anymore. But if you can remember how they were, like, somewhere in there, there's like energy that will reoccur mm-hmm. to you throughout life. Mm-hmm. And then you'll say, oh, yeah, this person reminds me of my grandfather. Or, like, you know, you start to see it more in the people that you already know. I think that speaks to some sort of like spirituality to me, like, you know, and I think that does actually, when you look at it in a broad point of view, really fall in line with the religion that I was taught as well.
Right. But it's interesting you say that because I look at any mass religion, if you break it down to the basics,
same
it's
shit,
so
right?
similar, man.
Same
it's
shit.
The same shit. And like we were talking about before with the something like Palestine and Israel or whatever, it's like if you even broke that down, it's the same thing. It's just people have been twisted over enforcing their beliefs on people, and it's like everything is the same. It, basically, break down like a religious belief. It's like treating someone like you would want to be treated. Family values. What else?
They call it the golden rules or the Midas rules or whatever. Like
right.
apparently this all comes back from the legend of like King Midas. I don't really know the whole legend, but apparently he was some wise king like Solomon or whatever, and he was the one that set. But the golden rules are also the same thing that you see. What is the? I'm sorry. I'm not like terribly up on my religion, but. There's the Ten Commandments. Yeah, Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And I don't know the order or anything, but those are the same things that echo throughout every religion.
Exact same
like,
thing.
That's a bullet point list of what all religions are really about.
That's exactly my point here. It's
very
it's,
famous one.
It's like you're arguing over the same thing. You're arguing over treat people kindly, don't do horrible things to other people, don't treat your family terrible, value family, value the good in each other. Like it always
all,
comes down to
all,
the same
all getting
thing.
Disobeyed for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Juan, what about you?
Well, similar to your experience growing up, like instead of
CCD.
I would
I don't
go to
know what that stood for. It was like catechism.
Central City Dump is what I heard around school, but I don't really know if that's accurate.
All right. Well, anyway, yeah, I would go to a Presbyterian Christian church, and
right.
Basically, my parents were the ones who kind of like had this join. Of course, like we're too young to really know what we're doing at the time, kind of going through the steps like you were, mm-hmm. and. Sunday school is, you know, is same idea. You go through, read a simple scripture, and then they do like a little song, and it kind of gets like ingrained in your brain, and like this is like, you know, this is spirituality. This is what it's like to be spiritual. Mm-hmm. But over time, you know, when you get older, you realize, you know, you start questioning, why am I doing these practices? What, you know, what is the purpose? You know, these stories are very. They're very generic, you know, you hear them, they're repeated all the time. It's very, like a waste of time almost, like I already know this. And at some point, you get a car, and you're like, oh, you know what, I'm not going to go to church, I'm just going to go to the bar or something, you know. It's like you start to set your priorities differently.
Yeah, Juan.
Yeah, like 12 o'clock on Sunday.
I had to run over back to my... I was, like, walking away from my computer for a sec, and I had to, like, run over back to my computer and unmute my microphone to say that.
I remember when I was in England...
Well, like, maybe I'll just go to the bar instead of church.
Huge. I remember a lot of...
Jesus
a lot of people in England. A lot of people in England when I was there would be like, "Oh, you're going to the church on Sunday," and basically that meant the bar. They called it church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, watch some ironic. Football and like you know.
But what about you now, Juan?
Well, that's where I'm going. I haven't gone to church really, and the only time I've gone to church is kind of just to. You know what?
Something changed.
It really seems like there is something in the back of your mind all the time. Like, no matter who you are, because you have a consciousness, you know, you're never really alone. You're always with yourself, but then it seems like there's another person there because you're talking to yourself. So that would be God. So, and that's kind of demeaning to people who actually pray to God. But I'm instead of going to church, I guess I started to kind of lose my religion. I lost my spirituality. I realized that it was more about just, you know, traditions and things that are repeated, passed down, generation storytelling. Didn't really have any meaning in my life personally. But I mean, I my parents are very religious still. Just like, you know, I mean, that's what it looks like.
Right.
It's and just kind of not going to church, not reading the Bible, all that stuff is just kind of lose your connection to whatever you thought was spirituality. But but it's something there. There's always something there. You just can't pinpoint it.
And yeah. I think that's like when I was talking about like that innate feeling, which now I'm glad Taryn gave me that word, innate. Couldn't think of it before. But I think that's where a lot of like sociopaths do not have that innate feeling. There is no compassion.
And that actually is really creepy. Like when you think about that, like, you know, there's right from wrong and all this stuff. Like there's an innate sense of right from wrong. And like to think of somebody that doesn't really have any scale of that, like, you know, it could be something as minor as punching on the shoulder or like when your kids like. Dudes punch each other on the shoulder and, like, fuck around with each other all the time. Dudes, like, will drop each other's trousers. Dudes will fucking dead arm each other. And you're, like, when you're young, you're getting all these shots still and somebody dead arms you and you're like, fuck, man. I just got a vaccination, you dick.
Nope. Like, but hit you right in your smallpox vaccine.
Exactly. Fuck, man. Now it's dead. Whatever they just injected and it's dead anyway.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, you know, like... people are really dickish for a while, but then there's this whole cutoff period where
I 100% agree
kick in, you know, like, and it really happens in levels. Cause I have to admit that in my past, I guess 5 years of life, I feel like I've mellowed out like a fucking oak tree or something. Like I've just gone,
we could cut you in half and check your rings out.
Yeah, exactly. If that's what you want to do, give me a call after this one.
But I agree. I think it's like, when you see the real sociopaths, whatever, you're watching a documentary or a prison documentary on people who just, whether they're mass murderers or rapists and molesters, and the scariest people are the ones who have no regrets. Go ahead.
Here's a side note. There was this one time that Teddy Hose and Scott Brennan were having a freestyle rap competition.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm interested to see where this is going.
Teddy had come up with a rhyme and he was like, oh, and I think this was at like a house party and everybody was really drunk. And Teddy came up with a line and everybody was like, oh, freaking explosion of noise. And then Scott comes back with this rhyme and he's like something, being convicted of a child molester, something, you look like Uncle Fester. This is like the best rhyme I've ever heard in my life. Do you remember this, Scott?
I kind of do, but I'm really vague and blurry on where it was.
House. I think it was at my house, and there was this 8 Mile style, like, and 8 Mile didn't even come out yet at this point. So, like, years later when I would see that movie, I was like, this is like that party I had.
Oh, my God. I vaguely remember this, but it's complete blur. But I remember the Uncle Fester line.
Uncle Fester,
like,
child
losing
monster.
Their shit, like Def Jam coming, like, ah, like, standing up.
Yeah, that's exactly
around.
What it was like. I know I was doing that for a fact. So when I think back to – whenever I hear the word molester, I think of that one time.
That's the best story.
You rhyming heard. Uncle Fester with child molester.
Let me get another beer. Back to the first note, I think it's like the kids that you see like killing animals and not fearing remorse and stuff like that. That's what's really scary. I feel like they're missing that. Whether it's a gene, whether
it's brain wiring.
Yeah, it could be a whole nature nurture thing. It's so hard to pinpoint it into any one thing, but that makes me that kind of shit makes me believe in good and bad, or you know, or evil, whatever it is. I feel like there is that.
It's like the ability to understand rules, but yeah, I guess you're right. Not having any regrets. What is that?
To me, that's the scariest kind of person who could kill a person or do something so horrible and be like, I just don't care. I don't feel any regret. I don't feel anything. I just don't feel. Like, that's the scariest thing.
Yeah, that's the human part that he's missing, basically, for the most part.
Although they say the same thing about language. They say when a person grows up without interaction with other human beings that know a language, that they will just – at a certain point, there's a cutoff. And like when you pass that point, you just cannot learn a language at all. You can't learn any language. It's not even just like I can't learn English. I can't learn certain types of languages, because there's different types of languages that deal with either intonation, they deal with grammar – structure, whatever.
Well, it's also
and
like
you can't learn any of it.
It's
after a certain point.
The brain plasticity.
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's also a point where your brain is like, you know, it's like a jello where it's just elastic and absorbs everything. It's like a sponge.
Well,
then eventually it kind of almost like hardens up.
You're not supposed to grow anymore, like brain like nerves or whatever. Like at some point, like they'll like regenerate if it need be, very slowly, but you're not supposed to grow. Are you supposed to grow new brain cells? I forgot.
Well, apparently you grow some, but it's like you know, like in your youth years, it's like on express. It's developing neurons and neural paths as quick as possible, and that's all that memory is. It's like retracing.
Yeah,
retracing
the same paths. Yeah.
Yeah, so like it's like, you know, like the old expression, it's like riding a bike, but like certain things, like say you don't use a foreign language for a long time, that path starts to decay, it starts to erode basically, and it's like if you expose yourself to that, it starts to open in that path again. It's why there's a lot of theories out there that that's what dreams are, like some dreams, like when you have random dreams, it's like, it's almost like some people believe it's like energy traveling through. You're touching things that you haven't touched, or sometimes you're touching things that are extreme that you do actually worry about, or you do have consciousness about. But that a lot of people believe that's what subconscious is. It's things that you may have forgotten, but they're still there. They're still in the brain.
That's really interesting. Like, I mean, basically, it's just like really when you think about it from a physical point of view, brain is harboring electricity, and that electricity is just burning through gaps in the actual like tissue within water. You know, like that's kind of what a brain is.
Well,
and then,
it's
like,
really interesting. Go ahead.
I mean, and that's interesting that like. When you break down what people think are these really spiritual things that we were just talking about, spirituality and all that stuff, and like dreams are like one of those also really touchy spiritual things. When you think about it being that maybe it's just that electricity sort of channeling through your night while you're in rest mode, the electricity decides to shut down and go back through the path that it's already taken in previous travel. You know,
I also see it. I mean, there's no science behind this, but I see it as like, you know, like electricity is like almost like a wild animal. Like there's no.
Well, these are very interesting theories, but, right. but like, let's not go too like, you know, let's not go into science fiction here if you don't know what we're talking about. That's what I mean.
No, but like electricity, like you know how electricity just kind of moves to any open space, basically. So like,
it's not just electricity though. It's like chemicals. It's not just electricity. Yeah. Well, it's synapses and all that stuff.
Exactly. But it's like, I think that like a lot of dreams, it's like, you know, you get your main roads, your main thought patterns, your main thoughts, and then like little flickers will go off on the side roads, and I think a lot of that is dreams and subconsciousness.
Well, do you want to, Juan, what can you talk about with this? Because you have a sort of like biomed background at this point, I think. And
I never took anything to do with nerves. I mean, that's like a specific class, like, or anatomy. I never took either class.
Did you take anything on nerve damage? Because I need to talk to you.
yeah. Well, I was actually gonna not talk about the science of it. I was gonna say that how do you explain like lucid dreaming then? Because some people can actually control their actions and everything. Like I'm actually pretty good at that.
That's terrifying.
Mm. Yeah, it's easy. It's actually like a skill if you want to explain it. The best way to get into a lucid dream is by having like a decent amount of sleep. And then going back to sleep immediately. But you have to, since you're awake, you have to actually keep thinking. You have to keep on using the voluntary part of your brain that you can control. Like, you know, think the thought process. And at the same time falling asleep, you'll be able to think as you're sleeping. And then you'll control what's going to be very vivid images of that, you know, that you would normally not only see flashes of in your brain, like when you're sleeping, like in REM. So it's kind of like you're taking control of something that it's hard to say. You're barely asleep. So that's what REM is, right? You're kind of like you're not in deep sleep. It's the opposite. Your eyes are flickering when they flash.
Like
you're shallow sleep.
Or something.
Yeah, you're about to wake up. That's kind of what's happening. Your brain is taking control of your thoughts.
Rapid eye movement.
Yeah. So you're.
Everybody.
The parts, so you know where I'm going with this, right? Sort of.
So it's when you listen to REM while you're going to bed. Is what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
I wonder if you're like it's called lucid dreaming. You said.
Yeah.
That'd be a cool name for a band. But anyway, I wonder. If like if you're able to do that, if you're actually getting a good sleep, like I wonder, like
it's actually,
you know what I mean? Like
it's actually exhausting.
That's what I mean. Like you're almost not letting your brain relax or recharge or whatever. It's amazing because sleep and dreams are still like not even understood by scientists. Everyone has a different theory, and it's really interesting.
There's not gonna be any way to really figure that one out. I don't think.
I don't know. It's pretty amazing though. Like there are actually like specific ways that I've learned to fall into lucid dreaming. Like you can either imagine yourself like looking at yourself in a third person view. That way you'll always be present as you're falling asleep. It's, you know, I'm probably getting
crazy.
You know,
it's crazy.
So, yeah, it's a little crazy. It is a little crazy, but
really interesting.
It works. That is kind of what I think is the out of body experience. I think that's what people get. They think they want to be awake, but their body is physically sleeping, right? Their mind is physically turned off, but they're still imagining it. They're like, oh, I need to wake up. I need to wake up. And then they're just constant. Now they can actually see themselves, like in their bed, because they know that's where they are. So
yeah,
once you grasp, if you combine reality and dream, then that's what happens in lucid dream. You combine reality and dream.
See, I usually when I go to bed, I try to dream of you in bed, Juan.
Works for you. It helps me. Whatever works for you.
And then all of a sudden I'm there.
And all of a sudden I'm lucid all over your face.
Oh God. I'm trying to be serious here. This is actually something.
No. Of course not. It's fucking awesome.
You're like that guy from Game of Thrones, Juan.
What?
The young one.
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
But well, I think
apparently
too,
he can take over wolves and he goes to bed a lot.
Nice. I think to wrap this podcast though. Up, since we're on dreams, we should talk about maybe our most memorable dream or most effed up dream.
We've done this like, story, right?
Yeah, kind of.
I think
that's okay. But I'll go first. I'm one of the most vivid dreams I have, and it's ridiculous. I was on like the Navy SEAL team that was going in to trap Saddam Hussein, and I was there, and we were in this mansion, and I got face to face with him, and it felt so real. And I didn't take the final shot. He escaped. And I woke up with this feeling of complete disappointment. And like, you ever have a dream that's so deep that you wake up and it takes you like maybe like 3 or 4 minutes to realize that it wasn't real, but like your adrenaline's pumping, your heart's pumping, and some, you even have like maybe a little bit of like excitement sweat.
Yep.
But I remember that dream so vivid, and it sounds like the most, you know, it sounds absurd, but I don't know. It was so in the moment, and I guess, I don't know, maybe, who knows, maybe I was watching the news that day or something like that, and like, I was just in the moment, and it was almost like one of those ones where you try to close your eyes and see the ending, and it just, it just couldn't come, and I was so frustrated. But yeah. That sucks, and I could picture every detail of it. I could picture the detail of Saddam's mansion or house that we were in. I could picture my partner Navy SEAL team, their faces. It's just crazy, like that somehow like burned a memory into my brain. How about you guys? Anybody? Dreams? No.
Yeah.
You want to go for it?
You go ahead, Juan.
Okay, well, I guess one of the first experiences of taking control of a dream is when I was much younger, when I actually had nightmares. Like, I don't have nightmares anymore because, well, I'm pretty good at dreaming, apparently. But it was
like dream theater.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. It was one of your fears. Like, one of my fears was dolls. I used to be afraid of lifelike dolls, like the ones with weird puffy cheeks and sparkly eyes. And the ones, and it goes, mommy, like, you know, you can hear them. And it's like freaky. So I'd have like multiple repeated dreams of I don't know why I was so scared of this damn thing. But, you know, it's hard to understand what you're going through in a dream. So all I felt was fear. And I related that to these lifelike dolls. And at some point, I don't know how I did it, I took control of this of my fear, and I just ran up and I kicked it, and it lands into a garbage can, which I apparently created out of my mind, and I took a lid and I covered it, and I never had a nightmare ever again.
Wow, it's almost like you defeated your subconscious, like in a dream.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So I've never had another nightmare about dolls again.
That's amazing.
Was this
so,
before or after The Matrix came out?
This is well before, man. This is well before. This is when I was like,
Taryn, how about you?
One of the only more memorable dreams that, like, I don't know. I started dreaming again more recently, probably like past 2 years. Mm-hmm. There was a long time where I just like had nothing. Like,
isn't
like,
that
I would,
frustrating though?
Hated it.
I've gone through periods where I don't dream, and I'm like, damn.
And it was blocks of years that I didn't really have really anything memorable. Like, I'd have like one every now and again, but like, it still wasn't anything that compared to when I was really dreams I can remember are so much more vivid. And one of the ones I had once was like, I was hanging out with like a bunch of random people, and this was like, I guess, early college or whatever. And I hadn't slept for days. Like, for whatever reason, I was just out like all the time, and I was like during the day doing normal stuff, like, you know, school, internship kind of stuff. Then I would go out at night and go hang out and stuff. So, like, my sleep budget was probably, like, a couple hours every night. And I would just go back and constantly do stuff. So it was fun, but I remember at one point I passed out. Like, I was back at my parents' house, and I passed out in my room, but they weren't home. Like, they had gone on a vacation or trip. So it was, like, basically, you know, just me in this, like, big old Jersey house from, like, the 60s and whatever. And, like, I knocked out. And like, you know, you can hear like wind chimes and drafts and shit going through the house. And it's got this old attic and like these weird places, like, what do they call them? Crawl spaces. And so I passed out in my room, but I passed out like full gear, just like laid out. And I didn't feel like I was sleeping. And I could definitely see how I was laying in my room. Like, I remember how my room looked. I remember that I was laying a certain way. It was like very disheveled looking, like kind of, you know, whatever. And then I remember in my mind, I saw it from my point of view again, and it was like a bunch of people came in, like a whole bunch of people, like a crowd full of people. And they all had like sort of like these like white faces, like, you know, generic blank ghost faces, basically. And, like, there was, like, a bunch of people just coming into the room, but it was, like, they ran into the room. But this was all just projected into something that I must have been sleeping, but, like, I think to Juan's point, people sometimes just sleep with, like, their eyes awake. They sleep where they're still seeing things, and, like, they can still see the room from a physical point of view, and then their mind is just
trapped.
Shut down.
Yeah.
It's shut down. So whatever it shut down with, it took that, like, still image with it. It's now painting projections on top with, you know, retracing neurons or whatever the fuck we were talking about before. With you're going through past, like, memories and stuff in that room, or you're just feeling, like, different, like, you know, situations in that room. And, like, that was, like, a really terrifying situation for me because, you know, when I shut down, I just could remember just being, like, peering out the room, and there's nobody else in this house but me. And I was just peering out the stairs, like, down to the stairs, and I could remember in the dream, I could see people coming up the stairs all far away, but it was all slow motion to me. So by the time, you know, they got over to the room, I was like, holy shit. And then that was like the end of my dream. Like, I woke up. I basically woke up in the same spot I was in the dream, and there was nothing there. And it was like really, really disorienting because, you know,
you were like half asleep. Like, you didn't realize what's going on.
And this is also like, you know, I wasn't partying that hard in terms of I wasn't doing anything weird. I wasn't doing any shady shit. It was more like I was going out and drinking, but I wasn't getting a lot of sleep, and I was really busy. And so, like, my mind was just, like, somewhere else, and physically I managed to shut down without fully shutting
down.
That's
frightening.
Yeah, it was a really bad – it was, like, a bad trip, but, like, without any supplements.
Yeah, I've had a couple of end-of-the-world dreams.
I have a recurring dream, since we're on topic. I have this recurring dream that comes back all the, I have two, actually. I'll go with the first one. The one that happens all the time is, and it's the same dream. The other one is a recurring theme, so I'll go to both. I have this dream where I'm driving on a bridge, and many times it's been that bridge from you know, like Route 9 to like South Amboy, Sayreville.
Oh yeah.
Where I'm driving on it and I lose control of the car and it goes over the bridge, like to the right, always to the right. And the car is free falling. And I always wake up before I hit the water.
That bridge is so high up too.
It's really interesting. I do remember one time I had a dream. I was in the water. Like it was like aftermath, but I was alive. But that's where the dream started. It's really weird. It's like really disturbing, kind of. But my recurring theme dream, I have, I always have a dream that my teeth are falling out. Like I'll be looking in the mirror and like my teeth will just crumble out, and I will be fucking. I will be talking. Like say I was talking to you, Taryn. Like I'd be there'd be crumbles of teeth in my mouth. It's so terrifying and anxiety, like giving.
You should wear. You know what? You should wear a night guard.
I'm not. What's that, like a helmet?
Are you brushing your teeth every night, Scott?
Every night, but I have looked this up, and like apparently, like it's a very common dream is like losing your teeth. Apparently, it's just like undealed with.
if you have
maybe,
like
maybe specifically for people from the UK
if you have like
but a, it just says it's like misplaced stress, like things you basically suppress.
Yeah, if
as an Irish person, you pretty much suppress everything until you kill somebody.
Like if you have a lot of tension and it comes out in your dreams, then you should wear a night guard because you're probably like
what is a night guard?
It's like a
is it a sword?
It's a mouth guard.
It's like a SARS mask.
It's a mouth guard.
It's like a lacrosse outfit.
It's
like that thing Scorpion wears in Mortal Kombat.
You don't know what night guard is.
I never even heard of it.
It's just a piece of whatever that molded to your teeth, so you don't clench your teeth at night. You don't grind them.
Do you think that's what I do?
No, if you have tension, you're thinking about your teeth. Maybe.
Maybe.
All
right. Anybody else have a recurring dream? Anybody?
Well, I got my favorite dream.
Ooh,
I got a favorite recurring.
It's going to definitely involve.
Seven Dust
and
this.
The Matrix.
No, it's actually cool.
I can take so many guesses as to where this is leading.
No,
I know Juan very well.
I used to go on these lucid dream like binges, like every night. Like I gotta do it again. And my favorite.
Oh, you got like a hit, crack.
Have you seen Inception? It's pretty much my life was like that before the movie came out.
Wow.
All right, so I
knew you would love that movie, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, The Matrix all over again. But what I enjoyed the most was my ability to fly. And it's not like it's actually superhero flying. Like I'd be just walking around the street and I look at other buddy, you know what? I just want to take a shortcut. So I would just jet off. It's like the most amazing feeling in the world.
You would feel like you're actually there,
right?
Yeah,
that's the thing.
It would
feel like
so
you're
real.
Yeah, you feel you're flying. You're going through trees. You know, you're passing birds. It's everything you imagine. So, like, that's why I kind of encourage people, if you know how to lucid dream, you know, really take control of that ability, because it's like it can be really powerful. Like, it kind of screws up your day. Like, you're groggy the whole day.
It does.
It screws up your day when you realize
you can't fly.
Yeah.
Are you, like, smoking J's and going to bed or something?
That's the thing.
It screws up your day when you got to go to work
that's
after
that's what
flying
you say.
For 6 hours.
That's what you'll say until you actually can do it. But it's really an amazing feeling. It is like drugs, except you don't need drugs.
Darren, do you have any recurring?
Yeah, teach me this shit, Juan.
I already said it. You got to practice. You got to learn how to... When you're falling asleep,
that's like a Kira shit, man.
Yeah, the thing is, the key is don't move your body, but your mind is constantly thinking, and then you'll eventually fall asleep, but you'll still be thinking.
Yeah, I as I'm getting older, I have massive sleep problems. Massive.
I can't. I sleep.
I'm up pretty much every hour and a half. I toss and turn. I think I might have some sleep apnea because Julie says that sometimes she'll catch me going like, you know, like stop breathing and go like, you know, like it's just kind of scary.
You snore a lot though.
I do snore. Yeah. I do snore, especially if I drink. Taryn, do you have any recurring dreams or no?
I used to. I think that when I was a kid, I definitely had things that were, I don't really remember them that vividly. I mean, recurring dreams have been a rare thing for me because I haven't really had so many vivid dreams anymore. That's like a weird thing for me.
Yeah.
Is that like I don't feel them as regularly, you know. I did for like a little while. They came back for like maybe like a year. And you know, it's weird. It's a disheartening feeling to not have them, you know, be such a regular feeling.
It's almost like you feel like you're missing out like on good TV or something. Like damn, I missed that. Like I really want to experience. Because dreaming is awesome. I mean, for the most part, unless they're horrific nightmares, for the most part, when it's a screwy dream, it's kind of fun to remember.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, I'd rather feel both sides of it because it helps inform your, like, day-to-day life. You know, it puts you in better touch with your own particular feelings inside, like, I think. But I don't know. I haven't had that many that, like, you know, really stick out to me in the past several years. So that's like a concerning factor for me because I have no idea what the hell that means. Recurring stuff, I used to have it a lot, and I think those dreams are kind of scary because you know a little bit about what's going to happen, and every time you're just like, yeah. Well, what's going to be different this time?
No, that was scary. Scary is that it's recurring. That's pretty much what's scary. That means that it's like in there. It's like lodged in there somewhere.
Yeah, and there are several recurring dreams that are statistically shown to, you know, recur among all humans, and those are those ones where you feel like you're falling.
The teeth one too. The teeth one, and the falling one is pretty much me going off the bridge, which is kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, like, you know, it's this feeling like you can see it in babies. It's actually a reflex. It's a reflex action. You can see it in babies when they sleep. They'll suddenly jump in a certain way. And if you put your hand on their bellies, I forget what this is called. It's got named after the guy. No, it's named after the guy that does it. It's like if you like the certain response is that the baby looks like it's like reacting to a fall. And the same thing happens in like throughout, like if you have a vivid enough dream, you'll jump the same way. Everybody has.
I guess the hand on the belly is like it. I guess it feels like they're getting caught or something like that.
Who knows? I mean, it's just like a reflex. It's the same kind of thing as like if somebody hits your funny bone or somebody hits your knee, like, you know, you're just going to like, it's a reflex, but it's weird because I think in certain cases that can be triggered by like a really long term dream or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like I think I've had dreams that are just like a full story, and then once the story resolves, the end result is you have a reflex, and it's really weird because you wake up, or you know, your mind like clutches into certain key factors of the room or whatever. So
I've always been fascinated by, like, you know how you said like a long dream. I always been fascinated by like how long is that in actual time? Did that happen in 3 seconds or was that like hours worth? Like I was always fascinated by like is my mind just in hyperdrive and that literally could have been 30 seconds of thinking, or was that actual the time it felt? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
time doesn't exist in your brain like that. Yeah, it's time is perception. So I mean, you can definitely slow it down because everything is a lot slower like in a sleep in dream.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, anyway, fellas, this has been probably my favorite podcast. It came out of nothing and it turned into almost 2 hours of awesome conversation. Really, really unique, honest stuff. So I want to thank both of you for coming on. I think we should make an effort to maybe do something like this once a week, and then I can continue with just getting a guest once a week or something like that. But this is the kind of creative conversation and debate and stuff like that I find extremely interesting, and I hope you guys felt the same.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Taryn, Juan, thank you guys both for being on the podcast. Real quick, on the comedy front, I'll be at Tierney's in Montclair on the 17th and Mara's in South Amboy on the 22nd. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Please pass it around. If you're interesting and have a point of view, I'd love to have you on. Keep the wind at your back, and I love you.